From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai Chidea. He was the master of making it plain. Malcolm X.
The white man believes you when you go to him with that old sweet talk, because you've been sweet talking him ever since he brought you here. Stop sweet talking. Tell him how or what kind of hell you've been catching, and let him know that if he's not ready to clean his house up, it should catch on fire and burn down.
Malcolm X wielded his uncompromising black nationalist rhetoric like a sword in the 1960s. His speeches captured the frustration and rage that was catching fire across much of black America. 43 years ago today, Malcolm X took the stage of Harlem's Audubon Ballroom. He was just minutes into what would be his last speech when assassins seated in the front stood and opened fire, hitting Malcolm in the chest. A man then known as Thomas 15X Johnson was later arrested and convicted of the murder of Malcolm X. He served more than 2 decades in prison for the crime. Today he is known as Khalil Islam, and his story of what happened that fateful night 43 years ago hasn't changed. He is innocent, he says. Khalil Islam joins us now. Welcome to News and Notes. He'll be joining us in just a moment. Also joining us, though, is Mark Jacobson, who wrote a story about Khalil's life in an article for New York Magazine last October. That article was titled, "The Man Who Didn't Shoot Malcolm X." Mark joins us now as well. Mark, are you there?
Yes, hello.
I appreciate your coming on. Let's talk first about why you wrote this article.
Well, I mean, as somebody who was born in 1948 in New York City, coming of age politically and intellectually or whatever passes for that, in the 60s, Malcolm X had a huge effect on me. So I'm from New York as well, and that's what's his home base. And when he was assassinated, I was completely shocked. I mean, it was had a big effect on me. And then if you want to fast forward to like 30, 40 years later, I happened to come across a guy named Khalil Islam, whose name rang a very dim bell to me. And there he was, and he said he served 22 years in jail and didn't do it. I mean, I wanted to hear what he had to say.
Did you believe him at first, and do you believe him now?
Well, there's been a lot of revisionist history about a lot of water under the bridge about who was responsible for that crime, and he was fairly well exonerated, at least unofficially, by the time I ever met him, because there have been several books written about it, and most of the people more or less agreed that he probably didn't do it, but he was never exonerated officially. And when I met him, I found him to be a completely admirable person, and his complete lack of bitterness about being in jail for something he didn't do was striking to me.
Well, let's bring him in now. I understand that he is with us. Khalil, are you there?
I'm here.
I appreciate having you on. Mark Jacobson is on with us, and he is talking about something that struck him, and when he said it, it struck me as well, that you have, according to Mark, a complete, and I think he said total lack of bitterness about spending 22 years in jail for a crime that you say you didn't commit. Is that true? You don't hold any bitterness?
That's correct.
And why is that?
Well, the only thing I can contribute to that is that I'm a very religious person, very spiritual, and I was so dedicated to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad at that time. I felt as though at that time that Malcolm X, Haji Malik Shabazz, I felt that he was totally wrong. I never heard of anything of the nature that he was speaking of as far as illegitimate children. I was totally ignorant of the Holy Quran at that time, which is the book that represents Islam and Prophet Muhammad. I didn't know anything about that. We weren't reading the Quran then. So my dedication to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I felt as though, well, if I have to do this because of what Malcolm did, then I'll do it with honor.
Tell us about your role when you were known as Thomas 15X Johnson in the nation and your contacts with Malcolm.
Well, before, are you talking about prior being a Muslim or?
Yes, when you were in the nation as Thomas 15X Johnson.
All right, I got you. My background was kind of violent. You know, at that time, it was a very hostile atmosphere. And we was always in combat with the revolutionaries or people that just hated our religion, hated the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, people that didn't understand what our purpose was. And any time that they insulted him or took our newspaper, Muhammad Speak, and tore it up or cussed at us, we would do battle. And we were all very well trained in the martial arts. So we didn't hesitate to what we felt we was defending the religion and our leader and teacher. So that activity and then incident that took place in the Bronx, I was also accused of shooting this correction officer. And, one event led to another. And one of Malcolm's close associates, I was out on bail then, $20,000 bail, and he got on. It's in the Newsweek magazine, 1964. I think it's April 14th or something like that. Well, anyway, he put an article in there, and they had my picture, and they said that he was very fearful of me because I graduated past his tutorage.
Are you saying this article claimed that Malcolm was fearful of you?
No, Leon, this guy named Leon Foyx, our mayor, he was a close associate to Malcolm. I'm going to try to make this short and to the point. He resented the fact that I graduated past the kind of the martial arts that he was teaching. I elevated and I had a Chinese sensei teaching me, and he knew that that was way above what he was doing. And he didn't have the kind of mind that would make modifications. And he got very jealous. He's very leery of me because at that time, like I said, I was involved in a lot of little scrimmages.
Well, let me stop you there only because we have a limited amount of time and there's some things I want to make sure that we get to while we have you. And we do appreciate your coming on. But tell me this. I think the audience would be interested in knowing how people react to you when they find out that you were the person who did time for the murder of Malcolm X.
Well, they're very disturbed, just like me, because it's over obvious. If you were around at that time and had any contact with the dialogue and the transcripts and whatnot, you would know right away, man, that I was a scapegoat. I was being framed. I was being set up. It's very obvious. I think that's the reason why, too, that nobody ever attempted to retaliate. Or to, cause me any problems. I did 22 years and nobody say a word to me.
That includes the Nation of Islam. Why didn't the Nation come to your defense?
Well, there was a very big conspiracy. And I couldn't pinpoint anybody. It was 12 years later, after being in prison, that I found out that there was some background activity there, you know. And because they didn't even come to the courtroom. They didn't support me at all. So that led me to think that, well, you know, there's something funny about this case, you know. And they either were satisfied that they had the facts that they had or the trumped-up charges, and they said, well, let's let it go. Let him deal with that,
Let me ask both you and Mark, do you find today, 30-plus years later, 40-plus years later, that there is still concern and interest about this case, about what happened and who was ultimately responsible? Mark, you first.
Yeah, I think that, it's actually astounding. When I wrote that piece, it was a lot of mail. I think that people are aware, people that know Khalil, and because of all the things that happened later on, and what Khalil was referring to was he was set up. And the people that actually did it 12 years later or something like that, after Elijah Muhammad died in 1975, the people that were keeping quiet felt that they could talk. And more or less what they said pointed to Khalil's innocence, which he had maintained all along. And the thing is that the Malcolm X case, the Malcolm X movie, which, you know, when Spike Lee made that movie, the whole thing was revived again. And I think that when you walk down the street on 125th Street, people are still buying T-shirts with Malcolm X on them. He remains an icon in the black community and everywhere else. And to hear, to me, that's what makes Khalil kind of a historic figure. Now, here's somebody who was caught in this kind of, when he talks about how he didn't really understand what was going on and didn't read the Quran and stuff like that, I think he was reaching for some spiritual meaning when he joined Elijah Muhammad. And then when Malcolm X spoke against Elijah Muhammad, to him that was, like, outrageous.
Well, let me bring him back in because we have less than a minute or so. Hopefully we'll have another opportunity to pursue this further, Khalil. One of the questions that I have for you, because you talked in the very beginning about your lack of bitterness, are you still trying, and I've got 30 seconds, are you still trying and hopeful of clearing your name?
I'm still, yeah, I'm in the process now. I think by tomorrow I will have some very good news. I need the transcripts. I could tell you, I could talk to you until I'm blue in the face, but you would have to see the evidence. And now I'm trying to, the main thing is to be exonerated, and I'm trying to get a lawyer interested enough to view the transcripts, and I don't think there'll be any problem. And I want to thank Mark for being on today. Back and supporting me.
Any time, Khalil.
All right, gentlemen, and I want to thank both of you for coming on. Unfortunately, the time has run out for us, Khalil and Mark. Khalil Islam, living in New York, joining us from our NPR studios there. Mark Jacobson, a writer for New York Magazine. His feature story on Khalil Islam appears in October 2007 issue.
Thank you very much.